Have you ever asked the questions in the corners of your mind?
I hear this orchestra and it makes sense what I'm doing. All of a sudden, you're singing the music in your body. Hearing that orchestra really puts that shape in your head of like what it is. It's totally out of this world when you feel it. It's like, amazing. That music is the biggest thing for me.
So you would believe in singing with your body?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to explain that out-of-body experience on the stage. Singing with your body, you get connected all the way.
Yes, I believe.
Welcome to this week's episode. As promised, we're delighted to have join us New York City Ballet's supremely talented soloist, Indiana Woodward, where we're going to talk all things I Believe. So, Indiana, welcome to this week's show. We're so delighted to have you as a guest with us today on I Believe. Now, I know we've introduced you and we've talked on our understanding of all the magic of what we know with you. As a fun thing, how would you introduce yourself?
I guess I used to introduce myself more as a ballet dancer, but now during this pandemic, I think we've all learned to put what we've known of ourselves on the back burner a bit and dig a little bit deeper. So I guess I would just introduce myself as a normal person living in their family home during this pandemic and trying to continue my craft in a bedroom, which is difficult, enjoying the time that I have with my family and finding new things to do, like meditation and things like that.
It's interesting when people get so used to introducing us in a way, the ballet dancer from the New York City Ballet, think, well, actually, there's so much more to me from here, and there's more to me that got here.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the things with I Believe that we focus on in our conversations is how you got here. What are some of the framework of who you are and where you've come from that brought you to dancing in the first place as your craft that are defining kind of your moments now? So why don't you give us a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. I was born in Paris, France. My mom is South African. My dad is French. They met in Paris. My mom was dancing there. My dad was a filmmaker and my mom was dancing on this film. Eventually they had me. When I was 6 and a half, we moved to Philadelphia, which is when I first started ballet. I danced at the Rock School in Philadelphia, which is a great school. When my dad went back to France, me, my mom, and my brother moved to California. So I started training at West Side Dance for a few years, and then I actually quit dance. I think I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I loved doing tennis, I loved ice skating, swimming, and I loved skiing so much, which is difficult to do as a dancer. So I actually stopped dancing and I took up karate, which is kind of a funny thing about my little story. And then I saw Romeo and Juliet with the Royal Ballet, maybe, and it threw me back into dance. And I found a school with a coach named Yuri Grigoryev, who passed away a few years ago, but he was the most incredible Russian coach. He danced at the Stanislavski, and he was a mentor. I mean, he was an incredible figure in my life. I trained with him from the age of 10 to 15. During the summers, we usually go away for summer intensives at the Bolshoi Ballet Summer Academy in New York City. I won a scholarship to go to Russia and dance with the Bolshoi students and then perform with them. So I went there for 2 months. And when I was in Russia, I got a letter that I got a partial scholarship to the summer course for SAB, which is a school in New York City that is like the feeder school into New York City Ballet. And then the rest is kind of history. Obviously got into the company and became a soloist. Right now taking a pause, but yeah.
Wow, what a journey already. Yeah. Everybody, all our listeners can relate, especially in sport or the arts. If a parent's really talented and then the children fall in suit, it's always that, am I pushing too hard? Am I not pushing hard enough? Yeah. Should I be using that talent? How was it for you? Did you feel it was like a jump start, or did you have to navigate your way through till you came up into your own independence there with it?
That's a great question, and something that I definitely know a lot of people struggle with. You know, in their lives, you kind of go with what your parents have done just because it's familiar and maybe they can help you with it. But my mom actually was very helpful in introducing me to things other than ballet and never pushing me where I ended up hating it. There was a great memory of mine when I was about 10 or 11 or so and I was working with Yuri Grigoryev. I really didn't feel like going to take class. after being at Malibu High, and I was just like, I don't want to go into class today. I'm not feeling it. And my mom was like, okay, you don't have to, you know, it's up to you. And so I didn't go. And we stopped the car and we got out in Santa Monica because we were already there and we were going to walk around. And I just started crying. And I was like, I can't believe I didn't go. I feel so horrible. I love it so much. I don't know why I wanted to not go. At that moment for me, I made the step to go into my own independent career. You know, your mom helps and your stepfather, your father, your siblings, they all help push you. But until you realize that you can't not do this, then it's like just solidified. I never missed a class after that. As you can ask my colleagues, they'll say I never skip classes, really, because I just love it.
How old were you when you started officially? Or actually, unofficially, how old were you?
Probably 3 with my mom in France, just like very young movement classes. And then for me, in my head, I really made a decision that this was going to be my career at 10, which is so funny to think about now because you're like, that is so young. But when you're at that age and you are doing something so intense in the sports realm or artistic realm, it's like you kind of have to decide that, you know, on your own so that you can keep going and have that dedication.
Yeah, I'm smiling. And I said to Jules, I'll probably share that with you. But when we were kids, the Nutcracker was big in town. And actually, ballet was a significant thing, especially for the little girls. We didn't really have too many other outlets. I swam. My sisters all danced. And soccer was only just coming in as an option for girls. But my mom one year wanted us all in the Nutcracker, brothers included. And there are 6 of us.
Wow.
My older brother, like, he's still captured in tights. My younger brother toured with the ballet as a result. He was in the Arabian Nights scene. My older sister was always Chevy Clara. My middle sister tried, but I don't think it was her natural forte. And both she and I were clowns. Come out underneath the skirt.
Polly Chanel Mother Ginger skirt.
Big skirt.
That huge one, yeah.
Yeah, spin out of underneath.
Yeah.
And front and center. Well, actually, I was front left side. And it's the only time in my life I got stage fright.
Yeah.
Absolutely stood still. Outer body experience.
Yeah.
I'm a swimmer. Somehow I'm dressed as a clown staring at an audience thinking, this is quite an experience for a little kid.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
And then the music came back. Back in the body, spin back under the dress, and off you go.
Yeah.
And I think it defined me because my younger sister, when she tells the story, that was the biggest moment of her life.
Wow.
She can't remember I was her partner standing completely still.
I'm laughing because I've seen the home video.
It is funny. I mean, we have it all on video. We were in the papers. But ballet had such a thing. You're young. It had lots of emotional challenges to it. You're on stage. You have that.
Yeah.
You're trying to get moves exactly right. You're trying to have a certain body type and all these things, which I don't think I was built to get through.
Mm-hmm.
But because I know in order to get through and to get through from 10.
Yeah.
It's really tough.
It's very tough. Lots of competition.
Yeah. So how did you do that? How did you manage that for yourself?
Definitely went through those struggles that you mentioned coming up in a competitive art form or sport. I think for me, I was so in love with the craft that I blocked out a lot of those fears and I kind of just wanted to be friends with everyone. So for example, the younger people in California that dance usually go to Youth American Grand Prix and compete for a spot in New York City or something, and it's a way for you to get seen by all the schools in Europe, in Russia, I mean, all over America. So it's really an amazing thing, but it's absolutely terrifying as a young dancer when you don't get to dance as frequently as someone who may have a stage that's accessible in a school. We danced on stage 2x a year, and so YGP was another opportunity to do that. So my teacher really ingrained a belief in me that it's really for me that I'm doing this and to enjoy myself instead of being afraid of it. I had a lot of stage fright. I still have a lot of stage fright, but I see it more now. Someone explained to me that being anxious and nervous is actually really helpful because you have the energy. It gives you that adrenaline to go on stage and also means you care. Doing these competitions, it showed me the realm of dance and all of the different dancers that try so hard in this craft. And that's where I really think I progressed in my vision of where I wanted to go, because the dancers there were so sure of what they wanted to do. And I'd never been surrounded by so many people that wanted to do the same thing. So I just made friends with everyone because I couldn't believe that we got to meet each other from all different countries. Instead of focusing on the competitive aspect, I would watch them and be like, oh my God, they're so good. How can I try and do that? I was very lucky not to have that mindset as a young kid doing ballet, especially you stare at the mirror all day. You know, you can have bad thoughts about yourself. Everything is a critique. It's difficult craft, but it's so beautiful, and it's so much more when you stop focusing on those negative aspects, because there's so much more to it. What got me through was the combination of being so dedicated to dancing and bettering myself, because I knew I wasn't anyone else. Like, for example, I don't have the most flexible arabesque or something that I wish I had. So I would just work really hard at it instead of being so fixated on wanting to be or look like someone else. Obviously, there were times when I felt that way. I just kept being told by people, thankfully, that, you know, you can't be anyone else. Everyone's already taken, which is a quote by Oscar Wilde, which is just my favorite memo to relay to dancers, because it's so easy to look at someone and say, I wish I could look like them, but you can't, and it's so beautiful to be different. But that took a lot of work. I had the support of my mom and my friends as well, and I was very lucky to run into the people I did that felt that same way instead of feeling like they needed to push me aside or something. We all nurtured each other.
I was going to ask that. In the premise of what we really are aiming for with I Believe is for everyone just to take that time and investigate what it is they truly believe in. There's so much that's imposed on us from other people, what we should believe, how we should believe, how we should think. Looking back at the age you were there, that's really astute for you to take that on board. There's always a mentor, and I love that. And you talk about Yuri saying, just be yourself. Things can get said, but to actually imbue them, I could see it straight away when I worked a few years ago with you on Concert on the Bluffs. You read any article about you, and it's consistently about your sunny disposition and your generosity of spirit with others. So it must have been affirmed many times along the way. I know your mum was there, and she was supportive.
Yeah.
Internally, was there kind of words for it, for how you realize it's something that was part of your makeup?
I was definitely told, and some people would explain to me later in my career that they were thankful I was in the room. A ballet mistress, Rosemary Dunleavy, who works with the whole corps de ballet in New York City Ballet. She's an unbelievable woman. She's been there for a very long time, and we're all her children, basically. She cares very much about us, and she recently told me she was so thankful to have me in the room because I bring a lot of positivity, which is actually something I didn't hear that often growing up in the dance world, because I think people are concerned with other things and themselves and stuff, so I wasn't really told that often that I had this sunny disposition, as you say, until later in life when I became a core member and also a soloist, and newspapers would write little things like that. It made me feel a little bit more confident to just be able to be myself, because sometimes I would feel shy that I wanted to kind of be friends with everyone and just was like super goofy. You know, I'm always the clown, and I guess it's probably a way to just make friends, you know, because if you don't really care what other people think about you, which obviously we do all a little bit, but if you make fun of yourself, then they can't really get to that.
It's a very Welsh way of going where it takes so much Mickey out of yourself that nothing can hurt.
Nothing can hurt. I mean, I was told that I was musical as a younger dancer, so I think that was something that I grew from. That was like my one thing that I felt very confident that I knew when to go on the music, and that my body just knew when to do it. And then I think eventually my personality came out a bit more openly with that. But it is an out-of-body experience for sure to be on stage. I never usually remember exactly what happened, but it's like you get transported to another world, which is pretty cool.
Then drop back in.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. It's like, oh, I'm back in my body.
Yeah.
And you're doing that all the time. And then you're also transcending things, you know, the music's taking you somewhere and you're merging with it and expressing it.
Yeah.
Jacob's Pillow was really close to where I grew up. And so we used to host the dancers in the house.
Oh, so nice.
Watch so much of the dynamics and the camaraderie. And then watch them on stage and think it's such a beautiful art form.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about there is be you. It is what I believe is all about is how is it we go about being ourselves in the world? And it is the framework that we anchor into. So what you're saying you're doing in ballet, which is one of the hardest places I would let's say, to do it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Is a lesson for all of us in our lives. It's like, look, if you're always comparing yourself with the person next to you, it's not going to help you.
Yeah.
You know, there's an individual needs to be able to think and express themselves here and find your own music in it, find your own expression in your own dance.
Yeah, and that's helped also with your coaches, you know, right. And the people that you see around you. If you have dancers that aren't comparing themselves in front of you to other people, you know, they may think about it, but they're solid in their own skin, like amazing confidence that you just can see in someone, then you're like, wow, how do I do that? And you can ask them and they can tell you, you know, fake it till you make it. These things that can help, those tools. But I would say that those people around you that really nurture you, like our ballet masters or ballet mistresses in the New York City Ballet, they really have helped show different interpretations of the dance, literally the dance, because like you say, it's a difficult art form to kind of be an individual because it's storytelling, really. And it's always been done before, unless it's a new work. And that's an amazing experience. But something that's great about the Balanchine technique is that he always did all of his works individually on each person. So even if there was a person that did the same piece that came after the original, he would see that person and maybe something didn't go well or didn't fit their personality maybe or something. I don't know the exact details, but he would change an arm position or something. And I feel like that's a really great thing to remember as a young dancer, that this amazing choreographer, and I think a lot of choreographers in the world, really do love it when you are yourself. So to bring whatever you are into the room, just being honest with yourself and with the person in front of you helps feed the relationship and the movement, really.
Yeah, it makes it much more second nature. Yeah. And so you can merge with it, right, better and integrate it.
I am the guy who is probably the last person to, as all my friends know me, that be doing dance anything. But I am inquisitive, and I love the subconscious, and I've loved sport in different ways. When I was in the UK, I had a production company, and I created a show where I brought two well-known personalities together.
Oh, cool.
And sort of guided them through a conversation. Yeah. And one of the requisites, prerequisites, was I try to get them to have like a little interest in each other. What brought me on to that was I did one of my episodes with Dame Monica Mason, who at the time was just finishing up as artistic director at the Royal Ballet.
Wow.
And I did her with Sir Derek Jacobi, who's a British actor,
yeah,
but he loves the ballet. So yeah. it was good fertile good ground. And they were great. But I didn't even think of this. So it was a good departure point for me that she found like old notations in the archives and things. So like you were saying there, that it's the dance remains the same and there's very few like new original ones maybe.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize you'd go back like sheets of music, but can you just talk through your understanding of how you, the notations themselves, and explain it to a lay person like me?
It's pretty amazing. I've taken a lot of interest in it this past year, or not this past year, but probably the year before, because it's almost a year now that we've been in this quarantine. You know, our ballet masters and mistresses, they have notepads of, for example, a ballet master, Jean-Pierre Frolic. He did a lot of Jerome Robbins' work. He learned it all. He was the second man to learn everything and be able to teach it on other people. So that if he couldn't do it, Jerome Robbins, you know, obviously he passed away. Now JP is able to do this work, and he has all of his original notes from when he watched these pieces. So I think each of the people who were the right hand people in the creation of the piece have their own little notes, which is pretty special to look at and see what the really original was before it kind of got changed a bit for each dancer, which is totally acceptable, but it's great to see that really original. And then the other rep directors, they have a way to watch the videos or watch several different videos if they weren't, you know, the second hand of these people. Look in the archives. There's a arts library that's right next to our theater that you can go and watch all of the original works, which is pretty amazing. See the notations, see the scores with the writing on it. And so they learn it secondhand from videos or other notes that are archived, and they bring their interpretation and their knowledge of that original footage to us. And then the last thing with the notation that just comes to mind is that we have, I think, a set of scores in the theater and in our rehearsal area, and they are of all the ballets. So you just pull it out, the rehearsal pianist pulls it out and puts it in, then puts it back in when they're done, I think, or maybe takes it home to study it. I don't know what the protocol is with that because I think it's pretty precious. But all of the notes, I don't know if they're completely original because they're probably very old, but there's so many notations on those things, whether it's the little joke that Balanchine or Jerome Robbins made in the room, so they would put that nickname, you know, in that part of the music. So the pianist is able to say, okay, we're going to take it from the laugh. And you just know where that is because the story's been told to you, which is wonderful. It's a way to kind of say, why is that in the score? And then they are able to tell you the story and things like that. So it's pretty amazing to dig a little deeper in that because you're not always presented with it. It's kind of a side note. If you notice it on the piano, you can go and ask, but it's not like up in your face, like, here are these notes, learn from them. It's that interpreter that helps you with them. So you can ask them about it and they can tell you so many stories, but it's pretty special to see those little notations on the score, especially, in my opinion. Those are beautiful.
I love that.
He's been curious about that. He's been
waiting
to ask. He's like, I found out they actually score this.
Yeah.
You explained there's stories within the story, within the story, within the story, isn't it? And it gets so layered and you don't have to be a dancer to appreciate that.
Yeah. And we even have sometimes trouble unpacking it. As a dancer and my experience, I can only speak from my experience, but I worry about knowing the steps. So I'm like, okay, I have to remember this. So I'll go over that a million times, listening to the music, not even noticing what's around me. And then eventually, if I've been given a nice amount of time to work on the piece, or if it's a complicated character or a complicated score, you can ask as the dancer. That's something that I personally would love to encourage in younger dancers and artists, to ask the people who are teaching you the stories, because there are so many and they just need to be a little unlocked. Once you know the reason why a step is created, it gives it so much more meaning, and then you can be even more genuine with the original or how you feel. It's a pretty cool experience.
A metaphor for life.
Yeah. I was thinking exactly totally. That. It's the fullness of the ability to express the story. If we are storytellers with our lives, or we're telling a story or emanating a story to people, understanding that story firsthand is always going to be a way of making sure you can bring it about three-dimensionally.
Yeah.
And also changing the story.
Yeah.
You know, okay, if this is the story, how can I relate myself to it? And so my steps don't trip me up because they become authentic steps.
Right. That's exactly it.
We often talk about being on an authentic path, being one that is your own dance. It is your own music, it is your own notes, and it's your own score. Because when you're out of line with the dance, you feel that readiness to trip, that readiness to fall. And I know that in my own life, and realigning my own life to what my own sense of purpose is. But I love it told through the ballet.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful way to tell it.
It is beautiful.
Jules has been curious too, and so have I, about your name. Indiana. How did you get your name?
My mom always tells me this story. I've heard it many times, so I kind of, I think, can get it right. It's not super elaborate. It was, I think, an old English name, actually. There's a song that's written, it's called Indiana. There's a book that's also called Indiana. And I think my mom saw that book and that name, and she said that she wanted to name me either Indiana or Phoenix, or maybe another name as well, but those are the two I remember right now. She was in the bath one day, pregnant with me, and she saw a little light coming through the window, and it went in her leg, and she just kind of knew that it was me, that was my name. She, you know, is very mystical, and I believe in those things as well, so it was just a little fate coming in and saying, like, I'm here. My name's Indiana.
Completely believe in that.
Yeah.
And we ask because we're so on the same wavelength.
So today, for the listeners, is our dog Nellie's birthday. But when I first went to get the two dogs, I was having dreams, and I have dreams that are kind of informative.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine said, have you dreamt the names of the dogs yet? I said, in fact, I have, but I'm not going to name them. She said, you can't have a dream that gives you the names, and you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
So she said, what are they? So, well, the boy dog is Tay, and in the dream it wrote T-H-E and erased the H. And And they said, she is Nellie. They're going to live with you, but when they go to your business, which was a healing center, they have work to do. Aww. And so I was like, she said, you can't not do what you know you were shown to do. They're telling you their names.
Yeah.
And I believe that. I believe friends of ours had asked, you know, I need this sign to know the name, which of these names. And they would get exactly that.
Yeah, it's that amazing. Sign. It's amazing how it manifests in all different ways.
Definitely. And it resonates with you, right? As you dance, it resonates in your dance. Like everything about it matches the energy of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, it's true. It's pretty cool.
We
love that. We talk about it sometimes. We like to put the jigsaw together of our own lives and humanity's lives and how we operate as spiritual beings having a human journey or however you want to term it. And it's almost like you've got a jigsaw there with your mum had that mysticism to or loved the mystical and the fairies. And you think of ballet itself, you've got to transcend or ascend, haven't you, in some capacity when you're on that stage and you're embodying or imbuing a story. There's a depth or a mystical element to them as well. How personally for you do you tap into or draw from that? Not necessarily even consciously, or do you think subconsciously when you think about it?
I'm happy you brought that up because it's something that I didn't always bring into play. As a young dancer, young girl, I would make ballets and I would have like fairy costumes and all of these things. I love fairies and mermaids and all of these amazing mystical creatures. When I'm on stage, I feel like I get almost like lifted up. And if it's a really scary pirouette, which is a turn usually on point, I'm always really nervous for it. But somehow it feels like I'm like pulled up out of my shoes somehow. And it happens on stage. I don't know how to explain that, but I've always felt that way. And I've been very confident in it. When I doubt it is usually when it doesn't work, which is interesting. So that aspect of it, I definitely have learned to be more confident in just the power of being on the stage and with the music and the dance. I think there's something very magical about it. I was let to do Le Sylphide, which is one of the oldest ballets in the world, and it's a fairy. It's a little sylph. My director at the time, Peter Martins, had put me as an understudy and someone got injured, and then I was put in to do the lead. It was with these three other principal beautiful dancers and me. It's basically a little fairy with wings, and in the end she dies because she touches the human. But my director always said that it was the most fitting thing that they could ever give to me. I really felt that way when I was doing it. I felt so at home, and it was the most magical synchronous experience because it tied in that mystical aspect. I guess I didn't even realize till today that it really did tie in all of that magical feeling of life that my mom helped me learn into my ballet, and it definitely translates into what I do on stage, I think.
Would you say that was your favorite role because of that, or are there other favorite roles that have other aspects that would draw you to say that? I can see that definitely is one that matches the energy of you arriving in this body and this earth all the way through to emanating that fairy energy on the stage.
It's so hard to say a favorite moment because personally, and I have friends that always make fun of me that I say it's my favorite way too much, because whenever I'm doing something, I'm like, oh, that's my favorite. This is my favorite role. And then the next day I do another role. And I'm like, oh, I love this role.
But you also, which I've heard you say, you know, we've chatted before, is that you're always stretching yourself to grow, which is, I suppose, why everything does become your favorite.
Yeah, because it's a new experience and it helps you learn more about yourself and your craft that you're doing. But to answer that question, I would say that the Le Sylphide, Aurora from Sleeping Beauty, and Juliet from Romeo and Juliet were my three most memorable roles because I grew up watching those ballets. And at New York City Ballet, we don't do the classical full lengths as often. So it was like a childhood dream. I mean, when I was doing Aurora, I could not believe I was about to go on stage and be this person. I was like looking around to see if anyone else was going to do it. This is a little scary. But eventually you grow into that character and you perform no matter what, and it's very special. But there's so many ballets at New York City Ballet that are connected with your soul, with the music and the dance. There's so many things with Jerome Robbins, like The Cage, that is one of my favorite ballets to watch. I've never done it, but maybe one day. Opus 19, The Dreamer, also Robbins. All the Jewels in Balanchine's works, Symphony in Three Movements, which is a Stravinsky piece. I could go on forever, but I would have to say those three classical ballets were probably the biggest accomplishment for me because it was something that I wished to imagine myself doing as a kid. You know, when you have those birthday wishes, that's what you wish for. And so I couldn't believe those were happening. It doesn't knock any of the other ballets that I've done, but it's just solely because It's something I looked forward to since I was, 10.
With I Believe, we talk about how our beliefs frame our lives and how our lives frame our beliefs. And at some point they merge, at some point they actualize into the dream and you're in that
moment. You can't even believe it.
And you're thinking, I'm in the moment already. What am I going to do? And how amazing to be so present in that.
Yeah.
That it's joy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you reach a dream, you're in the moment of what you dreamed into existence and you're disconnected from it. You're what you're describing is a total presence with it and the freedom of that presence. And that carries forward with you beyond that actual event, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's very
lucky.
Surreal.
Yeah.
Again, it's your mind goes off on many different areas, but I did martial arts for a period of my life, same as you did, and I was an instructor, and there was definitely a difference between taking a lesson in a dojo, that dedicated dojo where all that ever happens there is respect, is zen, and is martial activity, than maybe doing the same in a church hall where arts and crafts had just been gone on the hour before and some other meeting group was coming in afterwards. And I think the history, the New York Ballet, where you are, all those old notations that you talk about, the music, it's a culmination. It's almost like overtones, I suppose. When you say when you're pulled out in a pirouette, it's almost when people start singing and then there's an extra overtone in the room, which is, it's no one else is doing that. It's a collective force. But how would you put that in your words, being in that environment?
Yeah, I think it's a very sacred environment. There is a big difference from, and I think every dancer feels this, stepping on stage versus doing something in a rehearsal studio. Obviously, it's still dedicated to practice and it's a very old studio, so there's a lot of history in it and there's pictures of incredible dancers in that studio, so you get that sense still. But then when you step on that stage, it's a very surreal and sacred experience. You kind of take your own individual self out of the picture and it's a bigger thing that you're creating that's created by your colleagues, by you, and this legacy that's happening on the stage that you're able to transport people in an audience. And for me, the best way to explain that is that it's just a very sacred place and it's only created because of everyone that creates it. And you really feel that when you're the only person on stage and there's no lights, there's no orchestra, just the rehearsal pianist, the rehearsal director, there's no costumes. It takes such a huge amount of people to put on this extraordinary show that when you're by yourself on stage, it's a very sacred and tranquil time, like the calm before the storm, but in the most beautiful way of saying that. Storms are gorgeous as well. So that's how I would interpret what you're saying.
It's funny because there's that backstage and there's the on stage.
And that is the biggest difference. The energy that you have backstage and then how you feel in that wing. And then when you get on the stage, it's like, I can't even explain to you how.
I only know from a kid who's ultra sensitive kid, but if I can describe that, there's this amazing energy of getting makeup and everybody moving, trying to get everybody dressed, and then in the wings, the anticipation, and then they're an audience.
It's crazy.
For me, it took me out of my body.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us, that's how it feels. It's like you say, when you press record on something, all of a sudden you sit up a little bit straighter. Mm-hmm. And it's almost that kind of an energy when you go on the stage, because you're just a little bit more under the telescope of all these viewers. But once you get on stage, you almost don't think about that. Like, that's what you thought about when you were in the wings. But then when you're on stage, you don't even realize they're there. And you just are living this magic that's the step and the music together. You're literally showing what the music is.
You're riding on the back of the energy of that, and the stage holding an energy not only of history but of the collaboration of all those energies there. And if you're someone who knows how to fly, ultimately as ballerinas you do, that stepping on is getting ready to take off and let it carry you. Nobody told me to expect that. I had no background. I was going to go out of a dress and there you go. You just suddenly you're there. So as a little kid who feels the world, which I didn't know at the time I do, but I feel everything. I'm like, oh, wow, that is that's got me absolutely frozen. But for others, it just watch this beautiful flight. Mm-hmm. And for you, you describe feeling that, knowing that something lifts you off your feet and puts you in another place.
It's very true.
It must really also collaborate with the environment.
I could picture in my head that coming together. One of my beliefs, I believe implicitly in ceremony, because the subconscious understands since the dawn of time, I'm sure around the campfire, the ceremonies have been performed and there's sacred spaces and mm-hmm. and the intention, and again, I'm talking from a total outside point of view, just how I would imagine it, but knowing there's such a deep respect for New York City Ballet, what's gone on in that arena before,
yeah.
the people, the music, the other dances, the respect that the audience brings
yeah.
themselves.
Right. They dress to up want to it. Come
they haven't,
and
they haven't
see.
Come to, yeah. to argue or to bring anger. They come to be entranced.
Yeah.
And day on day and year on year on year, that builds. And the subconscious understands that. And you definitely, I can tell, are connected to that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
How are you feeling now? COVID has taken a lot of artists off for the physicality of a stage, and all of the audience is out of the physicality of the room where you can be, you know, blanketed
yeah.
in this energy. How are you doing? How is everybody you know doing in all of it?
Yeah. Personally, I have tried to take the positives out of this. Obviously, it's an incredibly difficult time for so many people, not only the dance world, just, I mean, everyone, literally the entire world. So just taking a step and reflecting and being aware of what's happening in the world, I also feel pretty sensitive to these things. So some days I would just not really be able to do anything and just very depressed, which I think a lot of people have felt during this time. But it also kind of showed me, again, my love for movement, because I could really not do anything and nobody would know and nobody would really care. Not because they don't care, but just because everyone's worrying about whatever's going around where they are. But I felt like I needed to do at least a ballet bar in my room. And I've done it like all over the house now. And it just feels like if I just get through this bar, then I'll feel more awake. I feel more myself. I feel like one day I'll be able to come back to dancing on the stage. So that's one aspect I've been able to continue working. But on the other hand, I also have found that my friend told me today, she said that she's fueling her year with intentions instead of New Year's resolution. Hers was to work smarter and not harder. And it really resonated with me because that's, I hope, how people are realizing that they can use their time now. We've never had a blank schedule, really, you know, as dancers. You never have that. You always have to practice. You love doing it, but you always have that schedule. So without that schedule, some days I said to myself, you know what, I'm not going to do a bar today. And then the next day I would have that feeling when I didn't take class that one time and I would be like, oh, I have to do 3 hours of class in my tiny room. But having that option to take it slow is kind of healing because we've been, especially as a professional dancer, always go, 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 go. And so taking the time you can reflect on other things you want to do. Like I've taken up a lot more meditation consistently, which is really a wonderful thing during this time to just come back to my breath, realize where I am instead of always focusing on what gives me a lot of anxiety because not being on point in a studio 5 days out of the week, I can't believe doing the things that I did on stage in the future. It's a scary, anxious thing that I know many people feel in our company and are trying to do what they can to take the positives out of this. It's a good time to step back from our own personal lives. Not that it's been, you know, an easy path. Nobody's had an easy path right now, but that's personally how I've been surviving, being more gentle with myself and having a bit more patience with myself instead of getting heated or frustrated, because that's something that I struggle with in the dance world. You know, I'll watch a tape of myself and I'll just hate it and I'll never be able to watch myself dance again. And I'm just like, why am I doing this? I'm terrible. But it's because we always strive for, with air quotes, perfection, which I know is not attainable, but it's a craft that you always want to improve on. Improve your steps, improve in other ways, how you look in a step, how you move, and things like that. So taking a kind of a step back and giving my nervous system a bit of a rest is a great way to think of a positive thing that's happening during this time, so that when we get back, it's going to be just so splendid to come back to the stage. No one's going to be able to take us off the stage or the rehearsal room. We're going to have to get, I think the whole company is just going to have to get pulled off because we're never going to want to leave again. You know, hopefully we'll never take it for granted again.
It's quite something to have the movement such a part of your life and have movement restricted in mm-hmm. any way. And that's for all of us. Movement is a form of an energy for yourself and is a form of meditation.
And therapy.
And therapy. Even.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all sometimes need to walk something off, run it off, yeah. move it. And for you, you were always meditating
yeah.
through movement.
Yeah.
So you're finding other forms of meditation probably when you can't fully express mm-hmm. it that way. And fear is something everybody's had to grapple with in this time. What if not? Yeah. What if it doesn't come back to normal or to where I left off? Yeah. What will I be or who am I now?
Yeah.
But you'll be a new flow anyway yeah. of yourself.
Yeah, with, just like every other day.
Right?
Always different.
We take a step back to take a step forward or right. a leap forward for yeah. that matter. It's the first time in the world everybody had no pressure on the ability to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a literal form of I believe.
Yeah.
The whole I believe, even the premise is it's so busy in the world pre-COVID,
yeah.
what went on. Everyone is 24/7
right.
in their world and what's going on. And it is good to take a step back and say, okay, here's
yeah.
a breath.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I believe in? What makes sense to me?
Yeah.
And it's a joy, like hearing you there, you know, it's just be more gentle on myself. There's a world message right there.
Yeah.
If all of us could just be a little bit more gentle on ourselves. And
yeah, it's difficult. You see all the impact of social media, magazines, all the news, all these things are, you know, you have criticisms coming in left and right for you or your people or your beliefs or whatever really in the world. And like you say, taking a big breath and revisiting yourself without anything around you is scary, but if you can kind of just be gentle with yourself and patient, hopefully it'll come up and it's a positive time to do this reflection and taking a breath. And obviously we're lucky enough to be in stable places where we can hunker down and just take a breath of our beautiful air, but really paying attention to that is crucial. At this moment,
we're encouraging everybody to hone their own, you know, mm-hmm. at this point, because of the amount of distraction and influence and almost temptation to be more polarized than we are internally.
Yeah.
Or join the debate that's set for us rather than the one we're wanting inside.
Yeah.
Is that stepping back, regrouping, rehoning so that you're coming out even more expanded?
I think when you say that, it makes me think of realizing what you need and what you don't need. Because, you know, for that time where we were in this very strict quarantine lockdown, you weren't able to go to a store to buy clothing. Did you wear your clothing that you wear in the streets? I mean, it's not all about clothing, but you realize that we should be thankful for the things that we have. And it goes to say, even with dancing, you know, I found that I didn't need to be in a studio to do my bar and do my work, even though obviously I'd love to have my point shoes on and fly in a studio, just jump everywhere. I'm going to be thankful for that, but to take it in a different way and jump in the grass rather outside and take it to a different place. It's super special to realize that you can do those things other places.
Forgive me this question. When you say when I do my bar, is it the traditional bar that's attached to a mirror that you, or is it bar, B-A-R-R-E, which are ballet movements?
No, the bar attached to the okay. mirror. That's right.
Listeners, you're welcome.
Definitely. I always forget to explain that.
Oh, well, so much is second nature. Because what I was going to ask with that, amazing when you see the shapes that you make. And you don't have to be a dancer to appreciate dance at all when you see it in action. I've seen, lucky enough to see it live with Concert on the Blossom. You did that and pictures and your Instagram. You know, kinesthetically, when you feel your body connects to what you're feeling and you're, is there like a shape or a specific something that's personal to you that you just, in ballet or in movement or any kind of connection, the body, mind and yeah. feeling connection?
For me, that transcends through connecting the step with the music. So like I hear this orchestra and it makes sense what I'm doing. And it sounds so simple when I say it, but it's totally out of this world when you feel it, because all of a sudden your steps mean more than they are because you're singing the music in your body, which is amazing to do. You know, as a dancer, you don't always get the chance to do that, I think, you know, dancing with silence or things like that. So hearing that orchestra really puts that shape in your head of like what it is. And also physical shapes, you know, obviously you try and hit something and you do and it's like, oh, amazing. But that music is the biggest thing for me.
So you would believe in singing with your body?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to explain that out of body experience on the stage. Singing with your body, you get connected all the way.
Brilliant.
I guess the singing is form as well. And I guess sound is in form.
Yeah.
And it's in a wave.
Yeah.
So you're connecting with the wave of that as well.
Yeah, and those steps were created usually from listening to that music. So it's like, and you take that away sometimes when you're being taught it, not because they're doing a bad job at it or any reason, just because solely personally I'm a little slower at picking up steps, so I won't use the music. I'll learn the steps, do it with the music. It's a little awkward sometimes. And then eventually it locks in and you're like, oh, that's why I'm doing this step, because this melody is here, or this undertone, or this instrument. You become the score. But literally, you can see it. I love Fantasia for that reason, because the music creates that dancing that happens and you just hear every single note, or you see every single note and you hear it. I think that's what's really beautiful about dance.
That's why I think when you were asking about scoring, realizing that actually scoring the ballet, you're realizing the unity between it and the music.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Is wonderful. Yeah.
What springs to mind too when you're talking there, and it's almost like, you know, we talk about the jigsaw.
Yeah.
And you'll explain it far more eloquently than me, but on Concert at the Bluffs, where there was that little vignette where Maria Newman played a piece. Mm-hmm. And I remember you at the time telling me you were channeling little Maria.
Yeah.
So you're bringing in like other realms there in terms of your channeling that.
Yeah.
And also you wrote moves for that. Mm-hmm. So there's two questions in that. Can you just talk us through the little vignette you did with Maria? But also if it's something that's going to further down the line in however your world shapes out, that you might do more creating of moves itself.
Yeah. So we did this little vignette with Maria Newman, and she did the most beautiful job on that violin and just sang so incredibly. And a friend of mine, Preston Chambly, actually choreographed that piece, because the reason for that piece, which is quite funny, is there was a costume designer, Morgan Le Fay, and she created these beautiful costumes for us. And there was a costume that wasn't used, and she was really, really, really hoping to see it come to life on a dancer. So we asked Maria if she could play us something, and that was the piece she chose. And so Preston and I created more Preston, but I gave my input, you know, as the dancer, and he's a choreographer like that. And we created this piece in, like, I think one day. And to do that is because of the story behind her song and the melodies, a collaboration of people all coming together. When you go on the stage, you know the story and things like that, and you're channeling it when you're choreographing, and you feel that inner Maria. I didn't get to rehearse with Maria. So when I did, which is usually what happens in the performances with the orchestra, you're like, oh my God, that's what it sounds like. And it's right next to me. And you see how passionate she is and the reasons why she does it as artists. And I danced with her because she was my accompanist in the most genuine way. We were really doing it together. So it was very special because of those instances of a costume not being used and creating such a beautiful, wonderful piece that I'm so thankful was possible. And I was actually talking to my mom and my boyfriend about this, that we would just love to, number one, redo another concert on the Bluffs. So it's outside, so hopefully that can happen quicker than other things, but also work a little bit more with Maria Newman, as well as my uncle Trevor Rabin, who is a beautiful guitarist and pianist, and dance next to them, because that relation of the dance and the music next to one another just really elevates that magical experience for the dancer and the music and the audience. It's helpful to feel the vibration of that instrument in your body. Very special.
It was a game changer for me in the arts as such, not being privy to that earth to see it. I remember Al and I spending the time when I was filming that and putting it together. And of course, I've seen that dance a thousand times when I was doing the edit. When you see it, you really get a feel of all of what we're talking about today when it all comes together.
Yeah.
There are healing modalities, which are sound, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the sound baths.
You sit in a sound bath, right? Yeah. So if you sit on the other side of a gong, it's going to resonate and, in fact, attune the body. It's like a tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that with each of the sound bowls, they're all a key.
Yeah.
So you were on stage with the Philharmonic Orchestra, right? That's a sound bath.
Yeah.
And you're in it and of it and with it. So I don't even think anyone can recreate what it's like to be on stage with the orchestra, or side by side with the violin.
Very
you
true.
Become the violin.
Yeah.
You talked about that with Deepak. And when he's playing, the strings are an extension of himself. So the musician is in the music and the dance is in the music.
And sometimes they don't even realize that they're each in this space, and that coming together makes it that much more interesting when you do talk to the musicians about it, because you don't realize how they feel. You say the strings are him, and it's such a beautiful thing to hear as a dancer, because we always have the music is just, we're so lucky to have that there for us to dance to. But then when you realize you're doing it together and both of your muscles take over, and it's a kind of bigger than you are, then just like we say, keep singing.
Transcendent.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people that listen from the UK and things too. We say Concert on the Bluffs because we all know it and we were there. But can you just expand on the Malibu fact of what Concert on the Bluffs was as
well? So it was a concert on Bluffs Park that is across from Pepperdine University, and it overlooks the ocean. It's outside. It's a place that the children of Malibu grew up going to play on, playing baseball there or soccer, whatever sports. There was dance in the little building that's there as well. And so it's a very magical cliff that looks onto the ocean. It's very serene, peaceful, very mystical. You know, when the mist comes in, it's like a totally unbelievable sight. So bringing Concert on the Bluffs to life was really bringing the people in Malibu that have created some sort of artistic endeavor or music, dance, film, all the things that went into it together in unison to give back to Malibu is what I always felt, because it was a place where I grew up and I didn't get to see much dance and music in Malibu growing up, because we don't really have a concert venue to do ballet or to bring an full orchestra. So having that being available to the children, I think all of our mission was really to show everyone that we can do it here and help facilitate some inspiration for younger generations, hopefully to start looking into classical music or classical dance or contemporary dance and contemporary music. We did, you know, all the above. So it was to give back to the community and also hopefully inspire some younger people, because I always was craving something that wasn't an hour and a half away, you know, in a different place. So having it be able to happen on a bluff that we all know so well in Malibu was pretty special. And there were so many people that came, just sat on a lawn. There was no formal seating. It was picnic style. And it was really a big, huge family affair, I think. Very welcoming and open environment. And, you know, maybe we'll be able to create it in other places as well. Who knows?
It was a real celebration of the arts, wasn't it? And in essence, bringing awareness to the gap in the spaces that we have here to celebrate the arts, but it was unifying.
Yeah, because there's so many people in this beautiful place that have an art history of dance, music, so many other things, film, photography, classical music. I mean, I could go on. There's, you know, everyone. So it's a mixing pot, a melting pot of everything. And so kind of being able to connect all of us together, you know, of the people who may not know each other, was really pretty special to make those connections, to try and make something that could benefit the whole community, really bring everyone together. It was big premise of it, I think.
Yeah, and achieve that.
Yeah.
So true. That's a little tiny part of what Al and I were trying to do with I Believe. And there's the part of the boo. It's I Boo Leave. Yeah. So it's for Malibu, which we all love and feel really connected to. Mm-hmm. And it's the be and believe in you. And we don't like giving it too much energy, but there is a certain factor or a thought that there's so many amazing creatives in this town and they go off and they give all of their energy to the world.
Yeah.
Concert pianists, you know, dancers, artists on all levels, and then they come back to Malibu to rest.
Exactly.
And it's like, and as Piers Brosnan said on that Concert on the Bluffs, when I was asking him about it, he goes, "We need an art center. We need it now. Let's build it. Let's do it."
Yeah, I don't know why we don't. You know, there's so many people that can offer their services, well, more their experience and their knowledge of it, one, to share it. And I just think that there isn't a big place to share those things as a community. So I think that Concert on the Bluffs really showed everyone that it would just really thrive here.
When we're looking at COVID, I take that premise on a global scale. Mm-hmm. We're missing places in the world right now. Yeah. We're missing them in our hearts, but they're also lacking the celebration of the arts and what it does. Mm-hmm. It unites, but it also transcends. Music calms the beast. And as soon as it starts to play the piano, Nelly's out cold.
And me. In the most positive way.
Yeah.
You know, it's something inside of us that calms the heart, and it's been missing in this time. And you see the emotional discontent and disconnect from what that is where is the music in our soul? Where are we tuning back in? Yeah. Where are we checking our steps and making sure they're aligned and remembering what it is to be ourselves and unite with the music of nature, unite with the music of other people, collaborate in love, mm-hmm. and co-create things that are extraordinary.
Yeah.
It is amazing what this last year has shown us in shutting that off.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And in turning it back on, everybody's going to need to tune back in, you know, retune, rehone.
Yeah.
And hopefully resonate higher or more expanded. If we're using this time wisely, that's what we should be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be something that we will always cherish even more than we did before. Hopefully these in-person sound baths or, you know, dance sounds, all these things that we aren't able to go and experience together as a unified people. And we'll hopefully be able to jump back in there safely.
Yeah. One of the things that we like to ask towards the end of our interviews is if there's any particular belief that really helped you through, that he's even helping you through now in the hardest of times. What do you think you anchor the most in to re-stabilize yourself?
I think to just take a breath is really a thing that has kept me grounded during this time, because as we all know, we forget to breathe a little bit. You know, even if we're just breathing automatically, you really forget to stop and stand in the place where you are and be where you are and not focus on what's going on your social media page, the fear of missing out that you're not where these people are, the expectation of not doing as much as your colleagues maybe are doing at this time. And instead of focusing on all of those things that kind of bring a bit of a negative feeling to yourself that you're not enough or you're not doing enough during this time, to really take a breath and look at your surroundings, you know, see what you're thankful for and listen to yourself for once instead of the noise of the world around you, directly around you, not, you know, on news and things like that, but to listen to what you need, what your body's telling you to rest or to be active if you're missing walking or, you know, go outside in the sun, those things. Really, I guess, to breathe and to just keep connected to nature have really gotten me through the most during this time.
That's lovely. So well put. I agree.
Yeah.
Reminding ourselves that we can breathe.
Yeah.
And nature unites with us in that.
Mm-hmm.
So on occasion, just remembering, you know, we all have masks on and things like that, but remembering you can breathe.
Yeah.
You can breathe. You can stop and breathe. You can take time off and breathe. You can rest and breathe, because in the breath is inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And we are meant to be being inspired in this time, but we're being distracted from our inspiration.
Yeah.
And vibrationally, we can be raising that in this time if we're keeping our thoughts strong and our heart strong. It's impossible to have perfect thoughts.
Yeah, of course.
That's why I'm asking, when you re-anchor yourself from the harder thoughts, you know, oh my goodness, how long am I going to be doing this for? What if not? It's breathe.
Yeah, look where you are. And hopefully that can be something that myself, and maybe if other people feel similar to me, to bring it back to their insane lives of always being in the studio, always feeling a bit overwhelmed in the best way possible, you know, something that I miss dearly today, but to bring that breathing and going to take a walk in the park if you need to look at the trees. Remember that we're all on this planet, so we have to treat it well, and it's bigger than us, you know, those things that kind of keep you a little bit more grounded and humbled so that you can go ahead and do your craft in the best way you can and then separate when you need to.
Couldn't agree more. So just on a final note, talking of the breath and the inspiration and the getting out in nature, if we bring it back to us locally, where in Malibu did you find that breath, that inspiration? And do you have a place in Malibu that sort of feeds all of that with you?
Yes, I love the beach. I personally resonate a lot with the dolphin. It's my favorite animal, and I just feel very spiritually connected to it for some reason. And whenever I see them, which is pretty often here, luckily, it kind of humbles me and brings me back to being grounded, like I said before. The ocean and mountains, any nature, but the ocean for me has really been a blessing to be around and go and take yourself to. You know, your cell phones don't work on the beach. You don't know what time it is, really. The time moves very differently when you're on a beach somehow. And you just kind of can spend hours just looking into the ocean and not even realizing. And it's a very magical, serene place to step away. And I think a lot of people feel that when they go to the beach to boogie board and look at the ocean, but also doing hiking in the mountains and the canyons, you can see so much up there, and you realize again how, not in a negative way, but how small we are in this beautiful place. And it brings you back to being able to breathe.
In the waves is movement meditation anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You can get reminded there's movement. Jules and I just started walking the Backbone Trail over the weekend. Just humbles, you know. Nature has this way of giving you the anchor.
Yeah.
When the mind sweeps you away from that. We needed to just walk and walk and walk and walk because we needed the anxiety in our legs to have an exit.
Yeah.
Just because the world is, you know, bouncing around at the moment and we need each other to settle. We're firm believers that even though people are using language like social distancing and things like that, that connection is a decision we can make at any moment.
Completely.
Connect to the earth, connect to each other.
Yeah.
And exiting some of the language that distancing inherently puts into the subconscious. Like, no, you're free.
Yeah.
You're free to connect.
Yeah.
2021, reconnection year. Yeah. Let's do it.
Definitely.
Right?
Even trust within this, something that's precious to us in the podcast series and the I Believe is we're all connected. And about three episodes ago when Al and I were talking about, we just shared our own I Believes as a poetic statement as such. And we talked about the medicine animals and I said, I believe in dolphin.
Mm.
Because exactly what you're saying, because it reminds us how to breathe. And
just
that statement that's in episode three where we're talking about, I believe in dolphin, Native American medicine animal that comes from dolphin. And I love that.
Yeah.
I was dreaming last night that we needed to reconnect to dolphin. It's breathing and it's play.
Yeah.
And they are two things that literally have kind of been under attack in the last year.
Completely.
You know, we'll take the inspiration of dolphin forward today. Indiana, if people want to see your dance and they want to be able to get to know more about you, where do they go?
During this time, a positive thing that I did was get help and created a website. So just indianawoodward.com. And I've tried to include as much as I can from my past YouTube and things like that that have been allowed to be shared. But other than that, I just Instagram, also just my name with an underscore separating it. But I've really tried to put everything on my website.
We'll definitely put that in the show notes. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Such a pleasure. Me too.
Really a lot of fun.
Yeah, same here.
And we look forward to watching you back on stage soon.
Thank you.
And
hopefully.
Yeah, and have really enjoyed watching you grow in front of our eyes too. We obviously came to know you through the concert on the Bluffs, but also have followed since. And we really believe in the magic of dance, the power of the arts and the role and importance of it. So
thank you for
all supporting
that.
You.
Thank you.
In
That's
this time.
Very sweet. I'm right back at you guys as well.
Beautiful.
And for the listeners, just a note too, if you need to get in touch with Jules and I, or you like what we're doing here with I Believe, find us on ibelieve.com. That's BULIEVE.com. And if you want to, you can buy us a coffee online there too. And that's basically donations to support the show. Regardless, this is our commitment through COVID, is to kind of bring positive and supportive thoughts and people inspiring to help us all through this time. So we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for connecting us, all of us. Now it's your turn. What do you believe?
Now it's your turn.
What do you believe?